Hi, and welcome to Brand Matters. This is a podcast where we discuss with our guests on how to create strong and meaningful brands. I'm your host, Misha Che, and today we're going to talk about PR and its role in shaping the brand perception. And I'm very happy to introduce our guest today, Dina Mostavaya, founder and CEO of global PR agency Mindset Consulting. Dina, hi, and welcome.
Hi, Misha. Hi, everyone. Happy to be here.
I know that you were named as the best woman in PR by the Davos Communication Award 2022, so very recently. Yeah. Congratulate you on that.
Thank you.
How did you make your way into the international PR scene, and how did you get this award?
Oh, gosh. Look, so it was eight years ago when I started my career in, working with the international companies and projects. So I was like, you know, searching some different ways of building my career. And of course, you know, when you speak English and you have friends, you know, around the world, of course, you're just interested in what is going on different markets in different countries and regions as well. So that's why I was like, okay, let's start and let's just try, you know. And then I spoke with the different PR professionals in America, in London, and in Barcelona, and they were like, it's easy, you just have to try, and that's it, you know. So yes, I remember my first project and first speech. I sent like over 60 emails, and I got only one or two replies, and I was like, what's going on? Difficult to do that. But then I just got some business coaches, you know, consultant sessions and mentors and PR professional who helped me just to understand how should I write the press release, how should I pitch the media and so on. And just, you know, step by step, let's say. Yeah. And about the Davos. Look, I don't know. I just decided to tell them about my results for my clients and our agency's cases. And I think the results I provided, it was like, you know, a lot of numbers and, you know, some analysis. That's why maybe it helped them to understand me.
Dina, sounds too easy. Sorry, I don't believe you. I think there is a lot of sweat and work in there. So let's go deeper. I looked at your career track and I saw mm-hmm. that you started as the in-house PR specialist, and then you mm-hmm. grew and moved as an independent PR consultant. And now mm-hmm. you're a founder and the CEO of your own international PR agency. So what was the most challenging when you became from the in-house moved to independent consultant? And I'll throw the second one as well. Why did you decide to move from consultancy to opening your own agency? How did that happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look, so I started my career in 2007, and the first agency I worked in was Meteor Group in London. And honestly, my in-house experience was only in different agencies. But then, yes, it was, you know, 2012 or even 13, and startups was on the rise. You know, they are still on the rise, I would say. But you know, that time it was like, wow, like, you know, booming market, what's going on there? And I was interested in just, you know, exploring new opportunities for me. So that's why, yeah, I just decided, okay, I want to work with different entrepreneurs, different investors. And that's why I was like, okay, the most challenging thing was for me time, I guess, because, you know, when you work by yourself, it means you have to manage your schedule to have time to, I don't know, meet journalists, your clients, partners, to travel, to attend different conferences, because of course you have to develop your network and you know, international network. So that's why it was like time. That time I slept like 4 hours, maximum 5 hours per day. Yeah. But still, you know, I think that the sacrifice was, you know, exactly for my career, and I you know, I don't regret right now. And yes, what else? I would say building my portfolio with the successful projects and cases, because of course when you're a consultant, it's, you know, it's all about your reputation. And what else? And about your network, of course. So that's why soft skills, negotiations, you know, sales, portfolio, relations with the media and partners and clients, time, this I would say. And then, I founded my agency 3 years ago, and honestly, it was, you know, just clear demand from the market. I got so many requests, you know, from entrepreneurs, like Dina helped me with the, I don't know, brand awareness, helped me with the interviews, helped me to understand why journalists don't reply to my emails, for example, you know. And I was like, okay, I sleep 4 hours. I can't sleep, you know, 1 hour. It's just impossible. So I decided, okay, it seems I need to found an agency, and I need my own team who will work with the clients, and, you know, and this is how it is, like this, you know, just easier.
Sounds like sleeping 4 hours a day doesn't seem that easy. But let's dive a little bit on the clients and how did you first acquire them? That was the most interesting. Mm-hmm. So how did you do, or do you do, your own PR for PR agency? And as you said, network. Mm-hmm. And how, I assume, you develop your personal brand to help your own kind of consultants and then the agency get the PR. To simplify, how do you get the clients?
Yeah, so it's all about recommendations right now, you know, but still, honestly, I would say, because three years we work is an agency. I mean, you know, I work as a founder of the agency. So we still don't have cold sales, like outbound requests to, you know, different companies, and we do not suggest them our services. It's still all the inbound requests from clients who did a pivot, for example, and now they, you know, have like new companies and new projects and new investments as well. I can tell you about myself. So I started from content, of course. I just decided to share my experience, my cases, you know, my results, and what else. I just wrote some posts on Instagram and LinkedIn as well, like some, you know, PR tips and I don't know, like how to pitch the media or what story, how to develop your storytelling, you know, how to, I don't know, speak with your partners, how to build international community, you know, all this stuff. And then I think that people just found out information and it was useful, I guess. Sometimes I got these messages and emails like, Dina, can you help me with this? Or, you know, can you help me with, fundraising, for example? And yeah, so it's about content. Then I decided to give free masterclasses, webinars, and lectures, because, you know, I think that to share information and your success story, it's important. Just to share, you know, in general, to share in our life, it's important. Then, regarding to these awards and rankings, I just decided to tell, you know, to more wider community about myself and about the agency. But still, I wouldn't say that we do like some, I don't know, advertising or marketing, you know. No. We are, you know, good right now as we are. But of course, it depends on what company, the size of the company you want to build in the future. I'm not into, you know, like big corporation or big agency as an Edelman or Red Havas, you know. I'm not sure that I would be able to, you know, to work with the, I don't know, thousands of clients, or I know, like a team of 100 people. Yeah, so I would love to build an agency, a small one, but you know, with the great performance, let's say.
Sounds like you're building a very strong brand yourself, because when we analyze different brands here on podcast, we realize that there is, of course, a lot of advertising channels, but the biggest and the strongest brands, no matter how big or small they are, they have this recommendation power, which I think you clearly do have. Tell me, why do clients recommend you or your agency to each other? What's the reason behind that? What is your USP?
I think my values and my principles, you know, it's too much like tough sometimes, because you know, for example, I usually say like everywhere, you know, to every client, we do not work with blockchain or crypto projects and companies. We do not work with everything like, you know, concerns like Web3, I don't know, NFT, all these words I can, you know, remember. What else? We do not work like 3 or 4 months, you know, our contracts like not less than 6, 8 months usually, because we are about strategy, we're about, you know, system, we're about the like very deep and like very deep relations with the clients, and as well like soft skills we use, you know, developing our relations with the partners and with different entrepreneurs and investors as well. So that's why, you know, we manage like our projects as a small family, let's say, because you know, I'm super excited about relations with people, not only, you know, like in terms of business. When I know like more information about entrepreneur and sometimes about his family or his team, you know, it really helps, because we pitch to the media stories. So, but it, you know, the story shouldn't be only about his business and his projects. It should be like, you know, more about lifestyle as well, because we all work with people, you know. Sometimes, you know, journalists in America, they say like people buy people, or people, you know, work with people. So that's why it's very important, you know. So yeah, like this.
Wow, sounds very strong. I love your idea on values and how do you say no, because I think it's very important on what and how do you say no to each things, which actually shapes both the personal value and the company value. Talking about your clients, am I right to conclude that your client portfolio is mostly about either startups or kind of young companies, or is it wrong and you kind of have the vast portfolio of different kind of companies?
Yeah, you're totally right. Look, so early stage companies, startups, projects, even early stage VC funds. But we do not work, for now at least, with corporations and big companies. So it's just, you know, different communications and different services that PR, that startups need, and corporation, for example. So that's why my perception of, you know, building an agency is like when you help people to grow, to scale their business. So that's why for me it's very important to see their like way, the result, you know. With the corporation is just a bit different, you know. All these services are a bit slowly, you know, a bit, you know, like I would say like a lot of I don't know, approvals you need. So, you know, with startup is just easier for me.
And it sounds like more fun to work with startups because you can get directly with the founders and with the decision makers. So it's not only about the speed, but also about the people. Tell me about a little bit more about how PR is different for startups and how PR can help actually startup to grow both the brand and the business.
So the brand and the business. Look, the most important things for entrepreneurs, for even, you know, first-time entrepreneurs, is about you know, awareness of their personal brand and their products or services they provide to their clients. So that's why it's usually about personal brand awareness in terms of product and business, in terms of, you know, partnerships and brand collaborations, because of course you have to use, you know, all the channels you have. And what else? Sometimes it's about investment PR, because they need to raise money. You know, usually entrepreneurs, they raise money like once in I don't know, like 7, 8 months. So that's why they need, you know, to be like well known, and they should be they have to be, you know, well known in like a professional community, but outside of this community as well, because they need to raise money from different, you know, investors and funds. So that's why they need to, you know, like to be like more presented on social media, in media as well. You know, some we use also, you know, conferences and I know some summits, you know, to present them their startup or just product. So yes, and usually we start our project with the with our clients from developing communication strategy. This is the most important because we need to define their positioning, their key messages, problems they solve, you know, because usually you found your company when you see a problem, you know, market problem. So that's why, of course, it's very important to present this information to the media. What else? Of course, we speak a lot about their competitors and the market size and some trends. It's very important as well. And then we just, you know, write a lot of content around the like person and around brand. And we use different, you know, channels to just publish this content. For example, from the first perspective, it can be like podcasts and some online media, but then you should use your social media and I don't know, you can speak in the universities or on like different events, for example. And then if we are talking about corporation and big companies, usually they need just help, you know. They already know their business goals. They already know their communication strategy. So that's why usually they just need help with some different tasks. So that's why, you know, we don't see the whole result, you know. You're not like a part of the success, because in startups you're a part of success because there is I don't know, like seed, series seed, you know, then series A, and then you see how team has grown, you know, how they scale their business in different countries. So of course you're a part of this process, and of course you know, this like motivates you a lot. But with the corporations it's a bit different. But sometimes agencies work with big companies because they need big names in their portfolio, and it's totally okay as well. But for me, you know, it's more important to see the result for the company, for, you know, like exact people, than to have like big names in my portfolio.
Right. And I assume that startups, they always, you know, have limited resources, both in terms of time, money and people. And I assume...
Oh, yes, that's for sure.
And I assume the speed there is
usually
different.
Usually, you know... Yeah. Usually they say like, hey, Dina, you know, we don't have money. We don't have investments. Let's pause everything, you know, but that's okay. You know, this is just a part of their journey.
And I assume that's the other part, that basically they really need to see the result and probably some quick results. And maybe they're very demanding mm-hmm. in terms how you set mm-hmm. the goals, measure goals and deliver the goals. Can you tell us a little bit more, how do you guys work with this, you know, setting the goals, measuring and delivering, and how is that also might be different startups versus the big corporations for PR?
Yeah, look, usually startups, okay, they need money, as we already discussed with you. They need money, they need awareness, and they need sales, of course. This is, you know, the main thing. Usually they come to us and say, like, these are our PR goals. So, yes, we have different, like, strategies and mechanics and tools that we can use, you know, in terms of PR and communications. So that's why usually we just, you know, propose to work, I don't know, on their own channels, you know, like newsletter or their own blog or podcast as well. Or sometimes we just suggest them to, I don't know, speak about their use cases and, you know, their clients' success stories. Because, I don't know, this, for example, B2B company. In terms of B2C, it's more complicated because B2C PR is about emotions and about, you know, like emotions and feelings. So that's why you need to, you know, to provide information about company, not about the exact product, but what, how your life can change, you know, using these products or using this app, for example. So yes, and if we're talking about big companies, corporation, as already said, that they usually already have their communication plan. So that's why, you know, we are just, you know, join the journey they already, you know, did. And that's why we just, you know, became like a part of some, you know, like departments. So, and we just help with the, you know, I don't know, with media relations, for example. I also want to say about crisis prediction plan. It's very important for startups, for companies, like for big companies as well. They have their own policy, you know, they have like a lot of legal questions they need to discuss before the interview, for example, or before attending some, you know, events, or, you know, before, I don't know, like speaking about something, you know. With the startups, it's just easier. You have this plan and sometimes you need it. But sometimes, you know, they work, they grow, and everything is okay. You don't need, you know, to, I don't know, to work on their crisis. But with the big companies, they're like more well known. They're more familiar with their, you know, audience. So that's why sometimes they're like more under radar, let's say, you know, in terms of crisis. But yes. I assume you all know, guys, that recently there were a lot of crises, you know, in terms of startups. And the question is about not only about the startup and the founder, but is about due diligence that VC funds or companies like Morgan Stanley, you know, or JP Morgan did in the past. So, you know, but still, I don't know. I think the market just, you know, tries to clean itself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's I you know, my perception of the situation is like this. We just find the right way because, you know, the boom of startup, I don't know, was like 10, no, maybe 15 years ago, like, you know, that big. So that's why we just need time to, you know, to find our way. I mean, for all the, you know, like tech community, not just for us.
I loved your idea about that people actually buys not from the company, but from other people. And I think that's very relevant for B2B and even B2C. And also, as I understand, there is, of course, role of the company brand and product brand, but there's also a personal brand behind the company. And sometimes, I mean, we see, you know, the Tesla or Twitter story and Elon Musk behind him. And I've personally been working in companies where there's a very strong a person stands behind it who has his own kind of storytelling of who he is. And especially social media, they completely opened up the opportunity to build this personal brand. How do you guys help to build the personal brand behind the startup company, especially if the founder, for example, or executive people, they're a little bit resistant? They're, you know, they're not this kind of public people. How do you push them, if you push them at all, or how do you help them to become more visible and more public in these cases?
Honestly, I am not the person who likes to push someone to do something, you know, because it's very important in your business, in your professional career, to do the things you really like. Because when you like something, you have these emotions, feelings, you are really interested in all the processes and what's going on, you know, in terms of your business and other stuff. So, of course, we have these cases when entrepreneurs said that I'm not into my personal brand. I really don't want to, you know, to give a speech somewhere. I don't know, to give an interview and so on. And of course, then we use their team. So he's like executives, co-founder, sometimes advisor, investor, or, I don't know, like CPO, CTO, you know. There are a lot of people in your company that are really eager to build their personal brand. Sometimes they just don't want to say it, you know, to disclose this information, their feelings. But usually they're, you know, ready to, they're ready to speak and to give an interview, I don't know, to help with content, with, you know, cases and so on. So that's why, yes. But personal brand is about, you know, first story, your own story, your values, your principles, I don't know, about, you know, your understanding of where is your company go and where you would love to be this company in, you know, like in the future. So then it's about market problems. That's very important because I don't know why then your company exists, you know. Of course, you have, you know, to solve some market problems. And what else? It about your expertise, you know, about your experience and about content in general. So that's why it's right now it's all about content, about video or audio, I don't know, like some, you know, text, but still everything is about content.
Let's talk about the content now and about the media. And understand basically there are two blocks of media. There's, of course, social media, which you can either develop or kind of grow. And there is the classical media. Still, there is a, you know, tier one medias that still get some readership either through offline or online or sites, or they have their own podcast, etc. How do you make sure that your clients get the best media coverage, and how do you get them into tier one media? So that's the first part of the question. And how do you help them to develop their own channels and their own kind of ecosystem of their own media?
Look, with the top media, and let's talk about American media, yeah? So just imagine there is a journalist sitting, you know, here, you know, in there in his room, and he got usually he get like every day 300 of emails, you know, like 500 of emails. Because imagine startups from all around the world, like Spanish, German, Russian, French, Japanese, all these companies, and usually they would they want to enter American market, and of course they want, you know, journalists to write about them. And we speak about startups, but there are thousands of PR agencies and PR professionals. So usually it's just, you know, a huge competition just for journalist attention. So that's why usually we say that American market, American to be in the American media is just the most, you know, important thing for your business because of, you know, market economy and so on, you know, but still just the most difficult part of all the communication plan. So that's why the thing is about to write the right headline, the right pitch, which should be maximum of like five, six sentences, not more. No attached documents, you know, just, you know, some tips for PR professionals. And then it's all about follow-ups. And you have to know all these mechanics, you know. For example, you have to follow up not the right day after you send your email, but in one day or better, 2 days. Then you can follow up, I don't know, on LinkedIn or Twitter, for example. Sometimes you can give a call, you know, it's easy as well. So that's why all these secrets, let's say, and tips we have to know. That's why it's easier for us to understand how we can, you know, secure all these publications in top media. So yes, and the second question was about how we develop these opportunities for them and about their own channels. Yes, you
Correct, the
said.
social media, yeah, how to help them grow that
Social
part.
media. Look, for example, LinkedIn. We have like, you know, 20, 30, let's say secrets, how we get like more impressions from each post and at what time you should post your information on LinkedIn. For example, the best time is from 10 a.m. until 11 a.m. your local time. Yes. So of course we know that we have this 1 hour. We can post this, you know, information, and then you have just 1 hour when LinkedIn, let's say, work on your post and promote it. But then, if in 1 hour you don't have any impressions, like likes, comments, and so on, let's say like LinkedIn stopped to work on it and just as you, I don't know, for example, you get like only 3 likes, so it will be like this, you know. So sometimes we just need to, you know, to give like immediate training for our clients, for entrepreneurs, and just we save them, we tell them all this information. So that's why, you know, we know how to, you know, how to work with this social media. And in terms of newsletters, as you remember, 2 years ago, one newsletter was acquired by Google. And, you know, it was like, you know, huge, huge news on the market because newsletter can be acquired in general. So, you know, everybody was like, oh, gosh, of course. So it means, you know, this is like a real business. So that's why when you write your newsletter, you have your some, you know, rules as well. And then you just develop around your newsletter like a small community, let's say, partners, journalists, clients, ex-clients, potential clients, team, you know, potential, your employees, or I don't know, like journalists as well. Yeah. So that's why, and then you just build your, let's say, you know, like community from all these people. And then just, you have to know to understand why you need to send this newsletter. What was the main goal, you know, what's the main purpose? So usually it's about sales, usually it's about, you know, telling success stories, or I don't know, to use some information from your partners and brand, you know, to use brand collaborations. So usually you have to define all this, you know, like strategy for your newsletter as well. Then concerning blogs, like website blogs, or for example, you usually can have also like blog on Medium platform. So when it helps you to pop up in Google, that's the main point for early stage companies. And then when like your potential clients use keywords on Google, so of course your blog, you know, your text, your columns you wrote can be, you know, on the first page of Google. So that's why it's very important, you know, just to be in terms of this, you know, information in the information field, let's say. So yes, and we can suggest like everything from key messages until like, you know, your like positioning or your, I don't know, like story, or we can also suggest you have to speak about this, you know, topics, about this, you know, problems, and then just, you know, a big, you know, like strategy, a big plan, content plan that we use, you know, like step by step, you know, like each month. And then you see the feedback from the market and from your community, and then you can, you know, build, you know, another plan in terms of their request, you know, and in terms of their, I don't know, like wishes. Because sometimes, you know, people just write me on LinkedIn, like, Dina, please more, I don't know, post about crisis, you know, crisis communications. Of course. Got it? Let's do that, you know.
Thank you so much for these tips. And I will definitely next time post on my LinkedIn from 10 to 11. Didn't know that the algorithm is working the best on that time. So something useful for me as well. Let's move, Dina, now from the content to culture, because I understand you are a very unique person and the agency as well. If I understand, you based in Barcelona, you have clients from different countries and you work with media in Europe and United States. How do you manage these cross-cultural teams, communication, and how do you develop your understanding on how, you know, to pitch to American journalists, to European journalists, when to follow up, how to say, what to say, etc. How do you manage and how do you develop yourself in this cross-cultural ocean of communications?
Yeah. Look, when I started my career in international communications, so 8 years ago, I traveled a lot, you know. I understood at that time, I understood that I have to be like, you know, in every country where I would like to work, I would like to have some projects. So that's why it was like, you know, everything about relations and speaking with just different people. So I had time when I had like 20 meetings per day because I just needed, you know, to build my relations with the journalists, clients, partners, and so on. And that's why, you know, it's simple. I just ask questions like, can I don't know, follow up you I don't know, in the same day after I sent your email? Or can I follow up you by giving you a call? Or can I do this? Or how is better? Should I write like, "Hey, how are you doing? Happy Friday. This is my pitch." Or I should write to you like right away, "Hey, Dana, I have this news." So, I just, let's say, collected all this information, like this data. And that's why I just knew from the beginning how should I, communicate with different people from different countries. Moreover, I read this book, Culture Map.
Great
It's
book.
an amazing book. I recommend it. And you find out all the information, like all these tips and tricks, to how to communicate, how to speak with people from different countries. So yes, of course, I still, do some like mistakes, let's say. For example, we have a partner in France, and we started to work with them like half a year ago, and from the beginning, our approach was like totally American. We called, we wrote like different kind of emails and messages like everywhere, because we were very, eager to understand how the market works. And at the same time, of course, it was like, about our performance for the client. And then he just called me and said, "Look, Dina, don't push me. I know like everything. We don't work like this in France," and so on. Sometimes people from Great Britain told me like, "Dina, you're too bossy or you're too pushy," because I send them emails like at 8 p.m. Yeah, but still, but yeah, what else? What helps me else? Mentors, consultants, different consultants. Yes, asking many questions, and just, being in the cities, in the countries you want to work in. For example, I had this experience in India when I was like, "Hey guys, I sent you an email. This is the information. This is my attachment," and so on. And they said like, "Doesn't work like this. Just send me all information by WhatsApp." Okay,
Wow.
got you. And then it was another stories, another story. I came to the meeting with a journalist in India, and he said, "Look, you started to work to speak with me about work and about project like right away. First, we have to drink a tea with you, to eat something, and then we should speak about work." I said, "Okay, I got you." Yeah, it was funny, but still, just people sometimes they are more, they just, sincere and generous to you. They just tell you how to communicate with them, how to work with them.
Yeah, no,
Yeah.
I like your very simple ideas that it's the best to ask people how do they prefer to work with them rather than, just guessing and throwing. And I had almost the same experience as you had in India when I moved to Croatia. That was 12 years ago. I was working for a Swedish company, and Swedish culture is very close to, American. It's very efficient. It's you get down to the business immediately, you solve everything in 5 minutes, and then you go. While Croatians, they book a meeting for an hour, but the first 50 or 55 minutes, you have to talk everything but the work. You have to talk about,
That's
the kids,
funny.
the politics, the football, everything. And if you're not doing, they perceive you as rude. And we needed to train our Swedish bosses to kind of convert in the big meetings. And that was very painful for them at the beginning. But then after a year, they adopted and they were really eager, to speak everything but the work, and they became true Croats. So yeah, I totally agree. And I love this book that you mentioned, The Culture Map. I think that's the best kind of scientific approach on mapping the different ways on how to give feedback, how to communicate, how to speak with people, how to manage people,
How to
etc.
write emails, yes. How to communicate with the boss and his manager. Can you speak with the boss without his manager, or the opposite? Yes, all this stuff. It's like amazing book. As I remember, Erin is a professor at INSEAD,
Correct.
this MBA school. Yeah, and I think that one day I would love to speak with her and maybe get a, like a master class, because sometimes you work with different companies and you don't remember all this, tips from the book. but you would love to, you know, to speak and to discuss it. And she gave like great examples and stories from her personal life, her professional life as well. And I was like, okay, it's just, you know, you have to know these cultural differences because, you know, the world is just like global, you know, in terms of professional life, in terms, you know, communication. And sometimes, you know, like, as you said, a Croatian PR professional can pitch, I don't know, American media or, I don't know, Japanese media, Chinese journalists and so on. Of course, we have to learn how to communicate with each other and we have to be, you know, like more generous, you know, to each other as well.
Agree totally. I loved how you describe how you build the relations and I understand that you travel a lot, you communicate with people a lot physically, face to face. But I also understand that pandemic kind of changed the way we communicate. Now, you know, the way we communicate right now is more accepted by majority of the people. Is there now a way to build a media relation without being physically present in the country where the media sits? Is that the way? And if so, how do you do that? How do you manage and build the media relations distantly? Is it possible?
Yes, it's possible, of course, and it's all about attention to a, you know, certain person, to a certain journalist, and of course, it's all about, you know, Zoom calls or, I don't know, like texting on LinkedIn or Twitter and, you know, mention his new op-eds or features or, you know, columns or, you know, some interviews and just to, you know, to say some kind words and just to mention his, you know, like work, let's say in general, but of course to be physical in a city or in a country, of course it's the best you can imagine. I had an experience when it was 2021 in November. Finally, I went to London for 4 or 5 weeks just to, you know, to meet my clients after pandemic and journalists and so on. So I had one, this journalist from BBC. I wanted, you know, to work with her, you know, many, many years ago. And I had an opportunity and, you know, topic for her. And then I just saw on her Twitter that she will be a speaker on a small, very small event, you know, speaking about, you know, like media pitching and blah, blah, blah. And I just, I came there and you know what, within just two or three minutes of our conversation, I pitched to her two stories.
Wow.
And she added me on her Twitter and LinkedIn and she gave me her personal email. So, you know, and then after like 2 or 3 months, I got a story on BBC. So of course, personal meetings, like this is the best. But still, of course, you know, during the pandemic, I had just, you know, these Zoom calls speaking about nothing. Just, you know, like, mm-hmm. Hey, how are you? What's going on? You know, let's drink wine together, you know. Like 30 minutes speaking about nothing, but you know, it's all about, you know, these relations you built for a long time, you know, of course, this just was like this, but still I prefer to meet everyone. You know, I'm like an old, you know, old mindset person, let's say I'm still about meetings. So that's why if I have an opportunity to go to, I don't know, to London, New York, or, you know, somewhere, of course, for me, it's much better. And you said that we are in Spain. Yes, my core team is in Barcelona. We registered our company in Madrid, but still, you know, a lot of journalists, they attend and they come here to different conferences, you know, and events. So that's why I usually, you know, have time to go there just to meet them, just to, you know, give some sentences like, hey, I'm Dina, blah, 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 you know. And yes, it's much better, of course.
Nothing beats the personal connections. And I loved your simple idea of paying attention to details. And if you really want to get someone's attention, you just need to follow, understand what this person like or don't like, or what you do or don't. So yeah, great tip.
Yeah. Yeah, let me add here.
Sure.
Look, for example, you have an interview. You're an entrepreneur and you have an interview. Just after the interview was published, just, you know, send like one sentence via email, like, hey, it was great to speak with you. Thank you so much for the interview, for this publication. It's really, it really helps, you know, building your relations with the media. Nobody usually does
just these simple follow-up things. Yeah, I will definitely copy that as well. I'll follow up much more than I usually do. Thank you for that tip. And Dina, you also told that one important thing for every startup is to get this kind of framework of what you do or don't do in the crisis communication. Is there any kind of basic rules that startups should follow what to do and don't do in crisis communication? And if so, can you please share it with us?
Yeah, of course. Look, the first important thing is that crisis communications is about short time. You have to develop your, crisis prediction plan and then use all this, prepared messages and answers right away within 1 or 2 hours maximum. Because, sometimes companies, I remember the statistics that only 3% of all tech companies have their crisis prediction plan.
Wow.
This is amazing. It's just wow. Yeah. Sometimes they just, lose time developing these messages, answers, or, trying to understand who will be a speaker and who will be, in communication with the journalist. Of course, it should be, ready from the beginning, you found your company. And then should be a team of people who is in charge of these, communications during the crisis. So one person should monitor all the comments on social media and reply to them. Another person should be in charge of communication with the media. Another person is a speaker, just official, company speaker. So yes, 3 or 5 people can help you with different, tasks, but still, the core team should be 3-4 people who usually don't sleep during the crisis. But yes, you have to publish your statement within 1 hour maximum 2 on your website, on your social media, speaking with the media, with the media as well, and what else. And of course you have to be into situation. For example, if you have a problem on your in your office, you have to go there. Right now I read a book CEO of Walt Disney worked during this 20 years as I remember for the company, and he said that my lawyers they just didn't allow me to have a call with the people who it was a crisis in their park somewhere in America, as I remember, and lawyers didn't give him an opportunity to give a call. But he said, look, I'm still human, and that's why I need to call to this family and to speak with them, And he said I was he cried after the call, but still, this is the personal touch. This personal touch is very important during the crisis, because sometimes people just. Companies, they try to avoid all this emotion and feelings and, to give just, very very hard statement about the situation, like we are working on it, for example, but no, it doesn't work like this, because remember that I said, people work with people.
Yeah.
This is the most important, I would say.
Dina, thank you. That's very practical and very useful. And my last question, coming to practicalities, we already mentioned one book, which I'm also a big fan of, The Culture Map. Is there any other books, sites, or blogs on PR that you recommend for people, especially from startup industry, to kind of grow their PR and brands? If so, what that would be?
Yes. So I think that the best book I ever read about negotiations was Never Split Up. So this is one of the best. This book was written by former negotiator from FBA, as I remember. So, this book is just amazing. What else? And of course, yes, Culture Map as well. And maybe the book is about PR. The name is Inbound PR. Ilyana Staryova wrote this book, and, she just provide this very, important thought for all the PR professionals that PR, we can measure PR, you know, in terms of numbers, amounts of publications, key messages, you know, like headlines and so on. So this book really helps to understand how you can measure your work, your performance, and how to deliver these KPIs to the clients. This is the most important book, I would say. And what else I can say? Oh, yeah, of course, the book about Nike from Phil Knight. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, the story, how never to give up. This is just amazing story, you know, never give up, because he was about to be bankrupt like 3 times, as I remember. And it was like, you know, amazing story how he always, you know, tried to find a new opportunity from this problem, you know, from this crisis. Yes, I love this book a lot.
Dina, thank you so much. That was very practical, very professional, very kind of meaty in terms of tips and tricks. I really much enjoyed, and I hope our listeners also appreciate the amount of information about the useful tips you gave to startups how to grow their brand through PR. Thank you so much.
Thank you, too.